This is 1988 Tops, where every card has a story to tell. Your hosts are David McKellis and Matt Kuzma. Let's play ball. Welcome back to 1988 Tops. David, what's our card for this week?
Our card this week is card number 50T, Bob Horner, first baseman for the St. Louis Cardinals.
All right, Bob Horner. This is a player we've talked about a few times during the series. But first, some follow-up. And David, you said that we had a quick correction to make about Billy Massey.
In the Billy Massey episode, we talked about his star-making role in the Kevin Costner film, and we said the wrong name. We said For the Love of the Game, but it is For Love of the Game.
I thought it was in a league of their own.
His star turn in The Bodyguard. Billy Massey was body double for Whitney Houston.
An officer and a gentleman.
Billy Massey was one of the thieves in Robin Hood and the Prince of the Thieves.
Also in The Men of the Tights.
Yes. Matt, you and I both have never seen For Love of the Game or For the Love of the Game.
Neither.
I've heard it's good. Some listeners really like it. I did watch the first scene or one of the early scenes where Billy Massey is at the plate. I think that he's the leadoff hitter, I believe. So thank you to all of the listeners who have reached out and said, I can't believe you've not watched that movie.
As of this taping in February 2024, For Love of the Game is available on several streaming services. I'll check to see if it's available for free streaming, perhaps on Amazon Prime Video, Apple TV, or other places. But my quick search shows that it's going to cost me $4, and I would probably rather buy a few wax packs for
that. You could get 17 packs of 1988 Tops for $4.29.
I think that's a better deal, personally.
Sorry to folks who love For Love of the Game.
Just like an overpacked magazine, we put in one too many articles. We apologize. If you at home have any corrections, any questions, any statements of appreciation, gripes, or complaints, you can send them to our email address. Our mailbag is 1988topspodcast@gmail.com, so keep them coming. But now let's go to this week's card and Bob Horner. And why are we talking about Bob today?
I started looking into Bob Horner a while back when we talked about the brawl between the Padres and the Atlanta Braves. A few times, I think we talked about that, maybe the Glenn Hubbard episode and Pasquale Perez.
Pasquale Perez, for sure.
Eddie Whitson, shirtless Eddie Whitson. Bob Horner's is a unique card in the 1988 top set, as he only had a traded card, similar to Scotty Madison. Bob Horner was at one point a big star for the Atlanta Braves and a number one draft selection, Golden Spikes winner, a big name in baseball. But at this point, he didn't have a regular card in the set because he was returning from MPB. Bob could have been an all-time great slugger, but injuries really slowed him down, and collusion from the owners forced him to play in MPB for a season, and then he returned in 1988, but didn't sign until December, so the traded card came late. He has no Sabre bio, but there are a few good articles from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and other publications that help us tell Bob's story.
Fantastic. Well, let's go to the front of 50T, and we have Bob Horner at the plate. He's just finished his big slugging swing. He's got glasses on. He's in the Cardinals grays. I like in this shot how it kind of accentuates that the belt is that black, white, and red. I don't always remember seeing that, but I really like the look of that in this card.
Bob's a big guy. He's got some curly little mullet going on. At different points in his career, he had a beard and a mustache. I think in this one, he only had a mustache. He didn't spend a lot of time on the Cardinals, and I'm not sure a lot of Cardinals fans remember Cardinals great Bob Horner. He only played 60 games for the Cardinals, so this not a lot of opportunities to take this picture. Must have been a spring training shot. Anything good going on in the background here? Got some blurry people in the dugout.
A few guys just sitting around.
I think that's Rick Ocasek in the on the left.
Yeah, Cars front man Rick Ocasek is for some reason very, very blurry in the dugout. unconfirmed. Let's go to the back of 50T. We have Bob Horner, first baseman, 6'1", 215, right-handed batter and thrower. Drafted by the Braves in the first round of 1978. Born August 6, 1957 in Junction City, Kansas, with a home in Irving, Texas.
His full name is James Robert Horner, went by Bob. No indication that Chris Berman ever referred to him as Little Jack Horner. I feel like that's a missed opportunity. No relation to Nico Horner, current Cubs Gold Glove winner. Any other Horners? No relation to former Illinois Governor Henry Horner. Bob was born in Junction City, Kansas, to Jimmy and Elaine Horner. They moved to Cypress, California, where Bob played Little League and his dad was his coach. Jimmy at one time had aspirations to be a professional baseball player, and according to Bob, his dad had a chance to try out with the Cardinals farm team, but he set aside that baseball dream to go back to work on the farm. So Jimmy had some baseball skills, had some baseball aspirations, but gave them up when he was young, turned that into training for Bob, and Bob was a great high school athlete. When he was a freshman in high school, the family moved to Glendale, Arizona. The impetus for that move was Elaine had a serious sinus issue. So the clear desert air helping his mom breathe, Bob went to Apollo High School, where he was a shortstop. I'm not sure if he was 6'1", 215 at this point, but Apollo High School did remind me, did we have a guy who went there? And I was thinking of Ozzie Virgil because I remembered that he was from Arizona, but he went to Moon Valley High School, which is different. Moon Valley High, much different from Sweet Valley High. But now we have an Apollo and a Moon Valley, and it does make me think that perhaps this is all further signs that the moon landing was staged in the Arizona desert. Other Apollonians include former NFL cornerback Prince Amukamara, famous Garth, Jenny Garth, who did not graduate but did attend the high school from 1986 to 1988, and four-time All-Star catcher Paul LaDuca. At Apollo High School, Bob had a great high school career, and his skills were noticed. He was a highly regarded prep athlete, and he had a scholarship opportunity to play at Arizona State for the Sun Devils, and the Oakland Athletics picked him in the 15th round of the 1975 draft. The A's didn't offer him much as a signing bonus, and Bob knew that the value of a college education was more valuable than the signing bonus for a 15th round pick, and Arizona State was a short drive from home, his parents could go watch him play, and they already had a history of baseball success there. Bob knew if he played well, his draft position would go up, and he didn't really have much to lose by going to play at Arizona State. He did say if he had been picked in the first or second round, it might have been a different story, but at this point, he wasn't emotionally or physically ready for the professional leagues.
He started with the Sun Devils in 1976, and he was teammates with Ken Phelps, Ken Landro, and Floyd Bannister as a freshman. He started out playing shortstop and was named All-Western Athletic Conference, hitting .332 with 9 home runs, which was a freshman Arizona State record. That record has since been broken by Barry Bonds in 1983. As a sophomore, Bob was even better, now playing second base, hitting .389, 22 home runs, and driving in 87, and was named a first-team All-American. Arizona State won the College World Series that year, and Bob hit .444 in the tournament, winning the tournament MVP award. After losing to Arizona State, Southern Illinois University coach Itchy Jones said, "Horner's the best hitter I've ever seen."
If we have a chance to put Itchy Jones in there, we're gonna talk about Itchy Jones. As a junior, Bob followed up that All-American season with a ridiculous season. He hit .412, 25 home runs, which was an NCAA record, drove in 100, and had a 1.32 OPS. Arizona State lost in the final of the College World Series to USC. There was no back-to-back title situation here, but Bob did win the first ever Golden Spikes Award, given out for the first time that year to the nation's best college player. At that point, he held the career home run mark with 56. That was since broken by a bunch of players when home runs became more prevalent in NCAA baseball, currently held by Inky, who had 100 home runs at Oklahoma State. In the 1978 draft, Atlanta had the first pick, and Bob said, "When Hank Aaron shows up at ASU Stadium to scout you, you pretty much know where you're going."
Yeah, the Braves made Bob the first pick in the draft, and he signed a $162,000 signing bonus. I dare say that's worth more than a year of college. There was also an agreement made that Bob would not go to the minors. He and his agent, Bucky Woy, told Atlanta Bob would just go back to college unless they agreed to move him up to play him in the majors. So the Braves agreed to put him on the big league squad right out of the draft. Really, the Braves didn't have a choice at this point. By June, they were well under 500 and out of contention. And why not give this potential star a shot? So the first game against the Pirates and Bert Blyleven, and in his third major league at bat, Bob hit a home run. He later took a walk, and that was a decent first game, but the Braves lost.
He was also playing a new position. He's playing third base at this point. He'd played shortstop, second base. So going straight to the pros and picking up a difficult hot corner, it's kind of impressive. The rest of June was a little bit difficult in that first month, but Bob heated up in July. He was very good in the half season that he played, but he particularly thrived at the launching pad of Fulton County Stadium. At home, he hit .323 with 19 home runs and 48 RBIs in 49 games. So on the year, he hit .266 with 23 homers, so a lot of that came at home. He also played better than average defense at third base, and that first year, he was also playing with a rotator cuff injury that would require surgery after the season. And this stemmed from an injury in college where he slipped making a throw and fell on his arm with his arm out extended, and it jammed his shoulder. So he's been playing with an injury his last year of college and his first year in the majors. All told, an impressive start. Unfortunately, that injury would stay with him for the rest of his career. After the season, Bob won the National League Rookie of the Year award, beating Ozzie Smith, who played 157 games. So Bob only played 89 games and won the Rookie of the Year award. He got 12 first place votes to Ozzie's 8. Ozzie was great defensively, but the voters, they dig the long ball, and you have a rookie who in half a season hits 23 homers. That's impressive to voters. And it was overall a very good season and a great way to start. After the season, he had shoulder surgery and got married to his wife, Chris, and they are still married today.
Going into the 1979 season, the Braves offered Bob a $100,000 salary, and Bob held out. That's less than the signing bonus he had made for his first year. And the Braves said, well, you know, listen, we're only obligated to offer you 80% of your previous salary, which was only $21,000. The rest was paid as a signing bonus. So they said, you know, you kind of take it or leave it. Bob and his agent said that they should offer 80% of his full compensation from the year before, which was $183,000 with the signing bonus. Bob held out through most of spring training before reaching an agreement and finally signed for $130,000, which was the largest salary ever for a second-year player at the time. But, you know, Bob hit one Rookie of the Year and hit 23 home runs in his first year. Like, it doesn't seem that crazy to me to go for it. But we know how fans are going to look at this. The season opened and fans booed their young star. Bob went 1-for-3 in the opener and then had to leave in the seventh inning with an ankle injury and missed the next 30 games.
So an unfortunate start to the season. The fans who had been booing were then incredibly disappointed to see their young star go out injured. And while Bob is out, Atlanta GM Bill Lucas, who was at that point the highest ranking black executive in baseball, died of a cerebral hemorrhage. In the aftermath, in the reporting of this, Ted Turner, owner of the Atlanta Braves, implies that the stress of Horner's contract situation played a part in Lucas's death. Oh
my God.
Bob Horner called Turner a jerk. Turner said he would never deal with Bucky Woy again. And then Bob comes back from his injury and hits .314 with 33 home runs, 98 RBIs. Atlanta lost 94 games, but they had a legitimate superstar in the making in Bob Horner if he could just stay healthy.
Well, despite his previous strong words, Ted Turner, or at least someone in the Braves organization, ate their hat and negotiated with Bob and with Bucky Woy. It signed Bob to a 3-year deal worth $1 million. The year 1980 started out pretty bad, though, both for Atlanta and Bob. The team went 1-9 in their first 10 games. And Bob was 2 for 34 in that stretch with 6 errors. Bob wasn't happy with his performance or the team's performance. He had come from Arizona State, where they win every year, going first, second, and third in the College World Series in his 3 seasons. And now he had lost 90-plus games in his first 2 years. He said, "Going out every day and getting your butt whooped is absolutely no fun." That's a great quote. Ted Turner, he wasn't happy with his investment after that new contract, saying, you know, $1 million for 3 years, and then you got a guy hitting 2 for 34. So he decided to give Bob some time in the minors, sending him to AAA, and Bob refused. He refused to report to AAA for 3 weeks. After 3 weeks of the standoff, he was reinstated to the majors. His average at the time was .059 with 0 home runs. And in his next 114 games, he turned it around, hitting .284 with 35 home runs and 89 RBIs. He said, "I didn't play angry. Let's just say I remembered what they tried to do to me." Again, quote machine, Bob Horner.
Bob was confident in his abilities.
Yes.
The kind of guy who would refuse to play in the minor leagues. He's got a certain level of confidence. He also had some motivation here from team ownership. He's still only 22 years old. This team actually finished over 500 after 5 straight 90-loss seasons. So they're headed seemingly in the right direction with Bob, Phil Niekro, Dale Murphy, Glenn Hubbard is there. And then the strike-shortened 1981 happens. Bob played well. He hit .277 with 15 homers. At this point, he had also invested in some oil wells, which his agent said should give him some income in case of the strike. Not sure if he still has those oil wells. Bob, at the time also, like, he was a kind of reluctant star. He didn't look for endorsement deals. He wasn't really a public figure. But at this point, he's 23, on the verge of stardom. There's a 1981 Sports Illustrated article that says he's as feared as any hitter in the National League. Vern Rule said the key to pitching to him is to make sure that nobody's on base when he hits a home run. And that article also called Bob not cocky, but confident, and proud, but private. So Bob liked to keep to himself, but he knew his value on the baseball field.
1982 would be a breakout year for Atlanta under new manager Joe Torre. Bob played 140 games and had a very good year, hitting .261 with 32 home runs and 97 RBIs. Bob made his first and only All-Star game that year, flying out in his only plate appearance. But later in the season, as so often happened with Bob, injuries hit. A hyperextended elbow kept him out for the last 2 weeks of the season. Atlanta won 89 games to finish a game ahead of the Dodgers in the National League West, sending them to the playoffs against the Cardinals in the NLCS. The Cardinals swept in 3 games. Bob went 1 for 11 coming back from that injury. He only had 1 at-bat since mid-September, so it really just wasn't his series. But at the end of that season, he signed a new 4-year deal worth up to $6 million heading into 1983.
On Baseball Reference, this is listed as 4 years, $5.1 million, plus weight bonus. Like a wrestler, Bob had to make weight. The deal included $400,000 in bonuses if Bob kept his weight below 215 pounds. And the team had him weigh in on 13 selected Saturdays. It is unclear how many times he made weight and how much of that bonus he actually received. But from later pictures, including the one on this card, 215 looks about right.
Yeah, he's in there.
He's batting behind Dale Murphy. And Dale Murphy's on his way to his second straight MVP award. Bob's having a great year. I don't know if he's making weight, but he's hitting the ball. Through August 15th, he's hitting .303 with 20 home runs, 68 RBIs, a .143 OPS plus. He actually had played in 104 of the team's 119 games, so he's staying relatively healthy. Atlanta's 5.5 games up on LA, and then Bob slides into second base and breaks his wrist on August 15th, missing the rest of the season. The Braves finished second without that second big bat in their lineup. Bob had been heating up, too, in the 37 games in the second half of the season. He had hit .324 and had a .939 OPS, so he was just really playing great. And then the injury happens. The Braves finish 3 games behind the Dodgers what might have been if Bob had been able to stay healthy. Mm. And that one's kind of a freak injury too. And in 1984, he also had more injuries. His shoulder injury, probably the continuation of that shoulder injury from his college days, kept him out for 2 weeks in May. And then he goes on a tear, hitting .383 in May, and then broke his wrist again. This time it was a dive for a ball that re-injured the wrist. X-rays shows it was the same place as the 1983 injury.
That is a real shame. Without Bob in the lineup, again, the Braves can't make it. They finish 80-82 in second place, but well behind the Padres. And we mentioned the Padres. The Braves versus Padres takes us back to that glorious moment in 1984, this epic brawl, which we discussed in the most detail in the Pascual Perez episode, because it is Pascual Perez getting hit by Craig Lefferts that starts this epic brawl.
And we'll probably talk about this 15 plus more times.
I hope so. It's the best. It's the
Donnie
best
Moore
fight.
Was involved. I think we've got a
Glenn
Tim
Hubbard
Flannery card that we've got to do. We've got Craig Lefferts. San Diego's 10 games ahead of Atlanta. They're not really fighting for the NL West at this point. But the first pitch of the game, Pascual Perez throws at Alan Wiggins, who the day before had tried to bunt a few times for a hit. And after that, the Padres tried multiple times to hit Pascual Perez. Every time he went to the plate, it took him 27 tries to hit him because Pascual Perez was so elusive. When they finally hit him, Bob Horner wasn't even on the bench. He was in the press box. And he saw what was happening and goes down to the clubhouse to get in uniform. A Sporting News article talked to the Bat Boys, who were unwittingly involved in some form in this brawl. One said, "Bob Horner had everybody's back. I don't think you could ever find one person on the team that will ever tell you that they were surprised that Bob Horner showed up." Horner was the captain of the team as well, and his main role in this brawl was blocking Champ Summers from killing Pascual Perez in the eighth inning. Champ Summers, a Vietnam vet who was awarded a Purple Heart, then came back to the States, played college baseball at Southern Illinois, Edwardsville, and then ended up in the majors at 28. So not a guy to be trifled with, is running toward the dugout to demolish Pascual Perez. And Bob Horner shows up like a pro wrestler with an amazing perm.
He doesn't exactly do the Hulk Hogan wagging the finger, no, no, no. But almost. It is, you know, this is Atlanta in the 80s. This is Wrestling Central. So you have that feeling of it being an old-fashioned Donnybrook breaking out. Champ Summers looks the part for sure. Everyone should watch this YouTube starting at about the 50-second mark and watch it all the way through, because this is the way that baseball used to be, folks.
The glove, and Lefferts delivers inside, and I think he's going to be gone too. Here come the Braves. They are going after Lefferts. For the fourth straight time, Perez coming to the plate, and we've got one going now. And there are some hot-tempered individuals out there. Here goes Summers charging after Perez. Bob Horner has come out. We've got some fans involved now. Oh, my. Oh, my.
I would love to be Bob Horner in any fight situation, just showing up with your giant perm, standing in the way of Champ Summers. He didn't even really have to do anything. But what ended up happening then is the fans started throwing beer at Champ Summers because he got close to the stands. And then they're jumping onto the field, at which point somebody tackles Horner, who's got a broken wrist and a cast on, and he ends up getting involved. I think before he was just trying to like push Champ away. And this is when it really gets out of hand, when the fans start jumping on the field and trying to fight players.
These Atlanta Braves fans in like khakis and striped polos jumping onto the field. This does have the look of some Georgia Bulldogs student section, you know, jumping onto the field. These skinny little dudes thinking they're going to do something. They just get absolutely wiped out by the players. We're like, get these guys off the field. See some bros getting handcuffed and marched out. It's quite a scene. In total, 14 players, managers, and coaches were ejected. 5 fans were arrested. And Bob was quoted as saying, about one more pitch and you would have seen a full-scale riot out there. I think it was close already. Fans were getting a little crazy. They probably had quite a bit to drink, and they were just ready to come over the sides. I don't think we had enough police out there to stop them. I disagree. I think the players could have stopped them easily because these fans look pretty scrawny compared to Champ Summers and Bob Horner.
And I think that's what ended up stopping the fight, is the fans jumping on the field, and the players realized, like, this isn't not a good scene. So they kind of teamed up to help the police clear the fans off the field. There were still some other fights happening in the, if you watch the video, it, as the fans are jumping on the field, then the camera breaks away to Gerald Perry starting a 17th fight over here. But Bob Horner is kind of like a folk hero.
Joe Torre, who was on the field but not involved in the...
Oh, no, he was involved. He got tackled, too. He was in one of the fights.
I did see that he lost his hat at one point during the fight. So Joe Torre, involved in the fight, involved in the fisticuffs, he was fired at the end of the season, which was a sub-500 season. Eddie Haas was the new manager, but was fired in mid-1985. Bob was finally healthy, and he had a good season. In 130 games, he hit 27 home runs and drove in 89 runs, an OPS plus of 126. He had lost a step on defense by this point and was moved from third base to first base, playing 87 games at first. His defense impacted his overall value. On offense, he was a 3-WAR player, but his diminished range and 11 errors in 40 games at third base knocked him down to an overall WAR of 1.9. For the year, the Braves were back to being terrible, was usually the norm, losing 96 games.
Atlanta hires Chuck Tanner in 86. They again finish last in the NL West with 89 losses. Horner played a career-high 141 games. He had a similar line to 1985, 27 home runs, 87 driven in. Of those 27 homers, 14% of them happened in one game on July 6th. Bob hit his first home run against the Expos in that game off Andy McGaffigan in the second inning, a solo homer. Down 4-1, he hit his second home run, another solo shot in the fourth. The Expos then score 6 to break it open. It's 10-2. But Bob hit his third home run in the fifth inning, again off of Andy McGaffigan. He had a 10-2 lead, so I guess, you know, why pull him at that point? This made it 10-7. The Expos would score one more run. And at that point, the announcers say, "Stay tuned, folks, it's only the fifth inning," because Bob had 3 home runs and 4 more innings to go. He popped out in the seventh inning, and then in the bottom of the ninth came to the plate down 11-7 against Jeff Reardon.
Reardon delivers. There's a fly ball, deep left center field, right looking up. He did it! He did it!
At that point, Bob was the 11th player to hit 4 home runs in a single game. Now it's up to 18. But Bob's was unique in that it was only the second by a player whose team lost the game. The other was Ed Delahanty in 1896.
Whoa.
Bob said, "I had a good week that day, but it's going to sound like sour grapes. I hit 4 home runs and we didn't win the game." It was kind of anticlimactic.
That is sad. Later that season, Bob hit his 211th home run. This one was a grand slam, and that was his first career grand slam. That was a record, most home runs before finally hitting a salami. Another sign that you can only do so much just as one guy on a team. You can't load the bases yourself. And if you're hitting behind Dale Murphy, he is likely to clear the bases ahead of you. So with the bases loaded, Bob was good. 308 in 101 plate appearances, but that was his only home run. His 211 home runs before hitting a grand slam was later broken by Sammy Sosa, who hit a grand slam on his 248th homer.
Bob was a free agent after 1986, and we've talked about collusion before. Bob got offers from one team, the Atlanta Braves, and they were what he deemed to be lowball offers. He was 28, coming off a 27 home run season in which he played a career-high games, had his first 500 at-bat season, and no offers. The owners were working together to drive down free agent salaries, and that led to a bunch of guys going unsigned. And in Bob's case, initially he asked for $2 million per year. That was turned down. And then the counteroffer was 3 years, $4.5 million. And Bob turned that down. On the final day to make a deal, before being forced to sit out for a whole month, Atlanta offered him 3 years, $3.9 million. According to Battery Power, a Braves fan site, Bob did have another offer from the Charlotte Knights, who offered him $3,000 per month to play DH, and also would require him to gain 20 pounds and participate in a local professional wrestling circuit operated by the club's owners. This was later rescinded by the Baltimore Orioles, who were the Knights' parent club, but Bob would not accept that offer, even if it had not been pulled back. So there's no other serious offers. A bunch of players like Tim Raines and others were put in the same situation where they turned down their final offer and had to sit out for a whole month. But Bob got a call from his agent who said he had a team who was interested.
And that takes us to the fun fact at the bottom of the card that Bob played with Yakult Swallows of Japanese Central League in 1987. He went 6-for-11 with 6 homers and 7 RBIs in the first 4 games. For the season, he hit .327 with 31 homers.
We have discussed the Yakult Swallows before, makers of probiotic yogurt drinks. They have a mascot who we talked about in the Tom O'Malley episode, who was a free agent and signed for $50,000 in all-you-can-drink probiotic milkshakes. this angry bird, Sabakoro, I think his name was, he also has a line of beer, and he gets into fights. So go back to the Tom O'Malley episode if you have not listened to that one, because you were like, I don't know what Tom O'Malley is. If you want to hear us talk for 20 minutes about an angry bird mascot. So Bob plays in Japan, where he's known as Mr. Homa. Matt, you already read the fun fact. Another instance of the traded set having much better fun facts than the base set. The fact that they actually expanded their universe beyond the shores of North America is impressive to me. The fun fact might be an error. According to the Chicago Tribune, Bob started off that 87 season 7-for-11 with 6 home runs and 5 walks as well in 4 games. Either way, he said, I think I'm going to like this. After that really hot start, Bob wasn't quite able to keep up the pace, but the fans loved him. The Swallows were drawing 10,000 more fans per game to watch this new slugger. They set a home attendance record. Bob was relatively healthy. He played in 93 of Yakult's 122 games. He had some nagging injuries that kept him out a little bit. Played most of the season, hit .327 with 31 home runs, but by the end of the year, pitchers were avoiding him. He took 50 walks, and he also felt like the umpires weren't treating foreigners the same way that they treated Japanese players. So his strike zone got bigger, he had to swing at more junk, and he got frustrated despite that great performance. After that year, the Swallows offered him a 3-year deal for $10 million to stay in Japan, but Bob turned it down. Instead, in December, he took $950,000 to play for the St. Louis Cardinals.
And his parting shot on the way out the door was not great. He said, I don't want to be forced to go halfway around the world to play something that isn't baseball. Complaining about the pitching, the umpires, basically accusing them of being pro the Yomiuri Giants and anti-foreigners. He also complained about the whistles and drumming at NPB games, which threw off the concentration of the batter. The response from the Japanese media and fans was pretty harsh, calling Bob a mercenary. Well, obviously he was. I mean, he's a player coming in to play for money. But they said he lacked a fighting spirit because he sat out games due to nagging issues. It's kind of unfortunate. Felt so promising there, but when the strike zone is different for you and you're not getting those calls and it's that obvious, I can see a player being very frustrated with that.
And the Yakult Swallows were traditionally not very good at this point. And so if they could pitch around Bob Horner, other teams are going to do it. And the team, despite Bob's performance, finished under .500, fourth out of 6 teams. It just ended up in frustration. That said, in retrospect, in 2016, Bob's recollection was kinder than that initial parting shot. He said, I enjoyed it immensely. Don't get me wrong, it was a tough gig with the language barrier and culture, but they could not have been nicer to my wife and children. And he felt like he had a good experience when he looked back on it 30 years later. coming back from Japan to play for the Cardinals had lost Jack Clark to free agency, so they were looking for a first baseman, and they signed Bob, even though Whitey Herzog had some serious concerns. He said, "I don't like Horner. Of his lifetime homers, about 70% were hit in Atlanta. He never could hit in St. Louis. He can't hit, and he can't field. He never plays when he's hurt. I just don't know."
It's very encouraging to hear from the new manager. I think the culture shock is going to St. Louis.
You know, he's coming from Japan, and then he's going to have this cracker crust pizza. He's not going to know what to do.
They're throwing rolls everywhere. I don't know what that's about. But Bob was excited. He was excited about playing for the Cardinals, though. His father had turned down a chance to try out for the Cardinals long ago when he was a player. And he said, "He's always had a dream of me playing for the Cardinals. When the family hears about this, they're going to go crazy." After that initial excitement, Bob really didn't ever catch on in St. Louis. Whitey Herzog's concerns were on point. Horner appeared in only 60 games in 1988, batting .257, .348, .354 with only 3 home runs and 33 RBIs before a shoulder injury and surgery ended his season. He signed with Baltimore in 1989, but his spring training came to an end. He just didn't want to do it anymore. He said, "I was on a plane, and I'm sitting there once again with a bottle of pain pills in my pocket, and my shoulder was killing me, and I thought, what am I doing this for? Why am I putting myself through this? When you get up in the morning and know you need help, it's time to call it a day. It was no way to live." Wow. So closing the book on Bob Horner, 10 seasons in the major leagues, 0 games in the minors, 1,020 games, .277 batting average with 218 home runs, 685 RBIs, and an OPS plus of 127. Among the Braves' all-time batting leaders, he was 8th in home runs and 5th in at-bats per home run. Rookie of the Year in 1978 and a one-time All-Star. How about in retirement?
When asked what he'd been doing since he left the game, Bob said, "I'm not qualified to do anything." Bob lives in Texas with his wife, Chris, who he married after that rookie season. They had 2 sons and now have 5 grandkids. He spends a lot of time golfing and spending time with his family. And it helps that in 1988, that collusion scandal gained publicity as documents showed that teams were sharing information about negotiations to keep salaries down in violation of the collective bargaining agreement. An arbitrator ruled that owners had engaged in a pattern that undermined the free market, and that affected the salaries of more than 650 players. After years of this case dragging out, in 2004, it was determined that owners had to pay hundreds of millions of dollars in lost salaries and benefits, and Bob was one of the victims of that collusion, and so he would now be one of the recipients of that payout. His peak free agent years were 86, 87, and 88, all years where owners colluded. Bob was awarded $7 million, which was the largest amount awarded to any player. And he didn't necessarily want to be the poster boy for this, but this severely impacted his career. He said, "The way I look at it is, if you don't fight the fight never gets fought. Did I want to? Hell no. I don't want to be the guy out there with the banner, but sometimes you have to." And so Bob had that $7 million check and his career earnings and his oil money, and now he just travels with his wife and golfs.
Sounds pretty good. Well, David, this episode started with a card of a big boy who had just gotten traded. Now it turns out he was awarded the largest check in the collusion scandal and someone who made an impact in the majors and in Japan. So after all of that, what should we think?
Bob Horner is in the Sun Devils Hall of Fame, the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame. He's named one of the 50 best college athletes of all time by Sports Illustrated. His number 5 was honored by Arizona State, and he remains on the Arizona State all-time list for home runs. First, he's still first in Arizona State history. 8th with a .384 batting average for his career, 5th in RBIs, 3rd with a .720 slugging percentage. And a 2016 list had him as the 25th best professional athlete from Arizona State University. He was in the initial 10-member class of the College Baseball Hall of Fame, inducted in 2006, so one of the greatest college baseball players in history. In 1981, in that Sports Illustrated article, there were huge expectations for Bob Horner. Luke Appling, hitting instructor for the Braves, said Horner will hit 70 home runs some season. Atlanta manager Bobby Cox predicted Horner will win the Triple Crown some year. Hank Aaron said that someday Horner will erase some of Hank Aaron's records. And the tagline of that article was, if Bob Horner is ever able to play a complete season, he might set some long-distance batting records. But he wasn't. He played at most 141 games, the injuries took their toll, and one Braves fan page looks back and suggested that the team would have been better off if they had traded Horner in the early 80s for some pitching. And who knows if that sliding door scenario would have put Bob in a position where he wasn't injured, didn't slide into second the wrong way. And Atlanta had, at that point, another young third baseman, Brooks Jacoby, who could have stepped in. And instead, they traded Jacoby for Len Barker, a trade that didn't work out for Atlanta at all. Bob Horner was a big name. He could have brought Atlanta a big name, like Ron Guidry was one that was raised. The Yankees wanted Bob Horner. Jacoby would go on to play in two All-Star games, and he had a healthier career than Bob Horner. So it does make a compelling what-if, and maybe it would have helped Bob's career. But even with all those injuries and Ted Turner troubles and collusion, Horner had a solid career. From 1978 to 86, he had seven seasons with 20-plus home runs. There were five guys who had eight or more, only 15 who had seven seasons in that stretch with 20 homers. Guys like Andre Dawson, Gary Carter, Fred Lynn, Dave Kingman, Gorman Thomas, big-time sluggers. In that stretch, he was 13th in home runs with 215, but everyone in that nine-season stretch, in the top 30, played more games than Bob Horner. He was the only player in that top 30 with fewer than 4,000 plate appearances, and he was consistently in the top 10 in at-bats per home runs, and still remained 67th with a home run every 17.3 at-bats. That's a similar pace to Rocky Colavito, Jeff Bagwell, Reggie Jackson, and the great Steve Bye Bye Balboni. Unlike those Hall of Famers and Steve Balboni, Bob had only 3,077 at-bats in his career. Reggie Jackson was near 10,000. But on a per 162-game basis, Bob Horner averaged 35 home runs and 109 RBIs. The problem was he never was able to play 162 or even 150 games. With that home run rate, if he had been healthy, he would have been a 500 home run hitter. Instead, he only had 500 at-bats once. On top of the injuries, there was collusion, and of that, Bob said, "It's a shame because it wrecked a lot of careers, and for what? It accomplished nothing. Look at the salaries they pay today." He did say, "I will just say, God bless the players." Bob Horner always looking out for his teammates, for other players, but also looking out for himself and knowing his own value. So despite the lofty expectations, Bob did have a great career. It was just somewhat disappointing because of all of that missed time.
Yeah, so he was a college superstar, number one overall pick, went straight to the big leagues and delivered. This quote is just a really great one. He said, "I love the hand I was dealt. It could have been better, sure, but it could have been a whole lot worse." And it's a really great story and a good career. So thank you for the story today, David. And thank you to you at home. If you're ready for a little bit of wrestling and brawling, tell us all about it on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/1988 Tops Podcast. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.